Hey there, this is Sophie. Before we get started in our deep dive podcast conversation today, I just wanted to let you know that if you enjoy our podcast, you might also enjoy some of the other great content we have available for you on YouTube, our blog, and on our website. Check it out, russellinvestments.com.
You know, people today are much more in tune with social issues than they were before. But in the past, it's just been understood that it was not really possible for individuals to even express any preferences that they have in that space. Individuals today can now utilize different vehicles to get down to that customization level and actually invest within their principles and within the areas that they feel strongly about investing in, or not investing in areas that they feel strongly that they shouldn't be investing in. If you're one of the advisors that isn't thinking about this, then you're probably being left behind as a competitor in the advisor space, because the other advisors are speaking to their prospects and their clients about ways that they can tailor portfolios more in line with what their clients are looking for.
Welcome to the Helping Advisors podcast by Russell Investments. I'm Sophie Antal-Gibert, head of North America Portfolio and Business Consulting for Russell Investments Advisor and Intermediary Solutions business. Today, we are going to talk about personalizing and customizing the investment experience, especially for that high net worth demographic of clients. Building tailored portfolios that are sort of customized for a client's specific goals, circumstances, and preferences. For instance, think about a solution for a client that works, I don't know, call it the tech industry, or maybe back in the day it was the auto industry, and they're looking to grow their portfolio. But they hold a lot of appreciated corporate stock as part of their income and as part of their compensation, and they're not allowed to buy competitor stock, maybe. They are also maybe tax sensitive and want to align their investments with their values. Maybe they feel strongly about the environment and making sure that their investments help protect the environment and shore it up. An off-the-shelf solution for that type of investor might not be able to reach many of those specifications, or maybe even any combination of those specifications. But at the same time, as the advisor, you don't want to risk losing that client. So what can you do? Well, to help us answer that question and fill in some of those blanks for us, and also get valuable insights about the trends and the innovations in this space of personalization, I'm joined by my colleague, Kevin Knowles, Senior Director of Personalized Solutions at Russell Investments. Kevin comes to us with 14 years of experience in the industry, 8 of which at Russell Investments, where he has helped create and build and launch a number of different types of personalized solutions, targeting different types of solutions that clients are looking to be able to solve and challenges that they're looking to solve. So I'm thrilled to have Kevin here and join me today. Kevin, welcome.
Thanks, Sophie.
So thanks so much for having taken time out of your busy schedule talking with advisors and with broker-dealer firms and all kinds of different partners that are looking to really build on what they have available for in the realm of customized client portfolios. Obviously, you're living and breathing customization every day at this point, Kevin. Could you maybe get the rest of us up to speed, though? What is customization? Why is it capturing so much attention right now? I mean, arguably, I can understand that people have different goals, circumstances, and preferences, and that's probably been the case since the beginning of time. It's not like, you know, millennials have invented that or anything. But what's the impetus for personalization right now in particular?
You know, it's interesting because customization, it's been gaining a lot of popularity, not only in the investment space, but generally in all walks of life. You know, if you think about people's Spotify accounts, their iPhones in general, the clothing they wear, sneakers, their cars, even their Netflix accounts, you know, everything's personalized and a lot of it's personalized for them. And if you think back to the history of a lot of these products that have been around forever, there's probably always been somewhat of a desire for personalization, but the technology wasn't there to deliver that personalization in a scalable way. And now it is there. So people have gotten accustomed to it, and they're expecting it not only in those everyday type items, but also in their investments.
I guess you're right, Kevin. I guess it has become so commonplace, right? I walk into Starbucks and I'm lucky the barista knows exactly what my order is and knows that it's different from the person behind me. Or my iPhone, when it gets mixed in with my kids' phones or anybody else's phones, it's very easy with one tap to identify, oh, that one's mine, because yes, just the machine looks the same, but you know, the first picture, the first screen looks very different. I can see what you mean. And logging into somebody else's Netflix account feels like, whoa, this doesn't feel like my Netflix experience. And it's true, it isn't. I can see how now everybody's gotten so used to, even in these small areas of life, that granted, with the pandemic, I get Netflix has become a much bigger part of our lives since the pandemic. But even in these small areas of our life, there's so much customization. So people are coming to expect it in their investment portfolios as well. If I've got it in all these areas of life, why not here too?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And we're seeing a lot more demand for that. So on the high level, on the investment front, you know, customization, it's been evolving, right? There's been customization in the past, but it's been evolving over time. And really, if you think about the main things that investors are looking for in their portfolio is customization around their goals, circumstances, and preferences. And there's a lot of personalization that can be brought to those three different areas. So just to touch on each one of those a little bit, you know, goals could be things like investing for retirement, saving for college, a large purchase, trying to save for a bequest, or planning for your heirs. And the backbone of trying to invest for goals is really what's been called in the industry for a long time, outcome-oriented investing. And the inputs are really well established. It's things like time horizon, amount of assets, future savings expectations. And those are all handled, and the goals piece of this is really handled through asset allocation. And we've seen asset allocation solutions around for a long time. And the personalization of those things has definitely grown over time, but it's asset allocation and it's been established for a while. Now we have things like circumstances, and those could be employment status, your tax situation, the compensation structure, as you touched on in your opening comments, your marital status. All of these things are really important and can't really be solved as well in an asset allocation, with a broad asset allocation. And you need to bring in additional vehicle types to implement the asset allocation. So the underlying vehicles that are used to implement that asset allocation. On the preferences side, we have things, as you touched on, things like ESG and other preferences that individuals now want to make sure their investments are aligned with. We're just seeing a lot more interest, not only in making sure that your asset allocation is set. Obviously, that's critically important, but I think people are generally content with the solutions that are in the marketplace today on that front. It's the circumstances and preferences that are now coming into focus and gaining a lot more interest in the marketplace.
That's interesting. And I guess I can see how, I'm just thinking back to sort of the evolution of the asset allocation, right? Where sort of have a whole bunch of just static asset allocation, and then that may be evolved. I'm thinking in the retirement space, for instance, to target date sort of solutions where the asset allocation is based on a target date, whether that be typically your retirement date. And there you have, there is a certain level of maybe customization and personalization there. You could look at that as customization and personalization version 1.0, I guess. And now, however, being able to also bleed in some of these aspects of, well, if I'm married or not, that might have an impact on my, you know, on my preference or my circumstances and stuff and on my portfolio. And then preferences as well. I'm assuming there you're alluding to sort of ESG type of preferences.
Yeah. I mean, it could be ESG, and or it could just be areas or firms that an individual may not want in their portfolio. And, you know, people today are much more in tune with social issues than they were before. But in the past, it's just been understood that it was not really possible for individuals to even express any preferences that they have in that space. So they've just been accepting the asset allocation and focusing on that asset allocation, understanding that they might actually be investing in things that they don't necessarily believe in or strongly believe that they shouldn't be investing or helping those types of firms out. individuals today can now utilize different vehicles to get down to that customization level and actually invest within their principles and within the areas that they feel strongly about investing in, or not investing in areas that they feel strongly that they shouldn't be investing in.
Interesting. So I can see how from an investor standpoint, being able to customize and personalize my portfolio is a great asset, right? Now suddenly my portfolio really reflects what I believe in my situation and can be much more tailored to my needs, which makes me feel good because, you know, all investors are, and all of our clients are individual snowflakes, right? If I put my advisor hat on. Now with that advisor hat on though, I'm starting to think, okay, so I can see the benefit to my client, but what's the benefit to me of doing this? Because, I mean, it sounds great, but it also sounds like kind of a lot of work. What's in it for advisors?
We've seen, first off, I'll start with just the general trends that we've been seeing and where we've been seeing the industry moving from the advisor front. So there was a study done by Fuse recently where 80% of advisors said they wanted tax management. Actually, I think it was closer to 83%, and 80% said they were looking for customization. So clearly, this is an area that most advisors are interested in expanding into. And, you know, if you're one of the advisors that isn't thinking about this, then you're probably being left behind as a competitor in the advisor space because the other advisors are speaking to their prospects and their clients about ways that they can tailor portfolios more in line with what their clients are looking for. So that brings me to my next point, which is, you know, it also could help an advisor set themselves apart. So bringing this differentiation to clients allows the advisor to have a different type of conversation than they've had in the past. So in the past, they may have spent most of their time talking about that goals piece of investing, talking about the asset allocation, even talking about certain things like estate planning, and that all can still be done. But now we have the ability to pay attention more to taxes or these other preferences that could be ESG, or the other personalization piece that we haven't touched on much here yet is where an individual works and what type of risk they have just by virtue of working in a certain industry or at a certain company or equity that they've received at a certain company. So there's just now an ability for advisors to differentiate themselves in a deeper way and get to understand their clients' needs and wants and be able to implement them in their portfolios in a much deeper way than they have been in the past. And then finally, I'd say it also just gives advisors access to a high net worth demographic. And these types of investors have had access to solutions that have been more customized in the past. They're much more hands-on type customers. And as advisors are focused on the smaller end of the market, they tend to spend less time on these high-touch individuals. But with their ability to have these types of conversations, they can go up market a little more. And these products are so much more scalable today than they have been in the past that they're able to do so in a way that's not going to take up all their time and allow them to bring this to a larger client base than before.
That's interesting, Kevin. You mentioned that, you know, depending on what industry somebody might be employed in, they might find this customization more attractive. I'm trying to think of what sorts of industries that might be. I'm thinking, hear me out here, and I might be completely off base, in which case, please correct me. But I'm thinking things like the tech industry. If I'm thinking about tech has become such a larger part over the last 10, 15, 20 years of the index, having been such a growth-oriented industry. And yet the compensation packages that a lot of those, especially the senior executives in that industry receive, are in large part also equity in the company, especially if you've been at the company for a really long time. Now suddenly you hold a lot of this stock that is highly appreciated. You'll have a huge tax bill if you divest it. So is that the type of person that you're thinking of that might be searching for customization?
Yeah, exactly. And it's really threefold, I would say. So first, you have those types of employees that you just mentioned, and you know, Tech Republic puts out articles all the time on the tech industry, and they just put one out at the end of 2019 that talked about the growth in tech during the 2010s. And tech is actually now the third largest sector behind manufacturing and government. And a lot of those firms have grown, as we know, to quite substantial levels, but they all started out small and they incentivize their employees with equity. And emerging firms are doing exactly that. They're incentivizing employees with equity. And then you have not only super high net worth individuals, but employees of all sizes, all different income ranges, getting compensated with equity. And so when they get to a certain point, their holdings or their assets are tied up in the equity of that individual firm that they've been working for. Obviously, if they're holding that much in a single firm, they probably don't want to invest any residual money that they have in that firm any longer. And then when they get to the point where that money is completely vested, they need to figure out how to diversify around it or with it. But it's really important that we exclude a firm like that, or perhaps even the entire sector, because obviously there's high correlation across sectors. So investing in the tech sector, if you already have a huge allocation just by virtue of your employment and how you're compensated to a single company in that tech sector, you're at risk if you're investing or in more into that exact sector.
And I guess some employment contracts might also prohibit people, employees, from investing in competitor stock or that kind of thing, which, you know, if we're investing in just a non-customizable, non-personalizable portfolio, you can't dictate that. You can't actually accommodate that.
That's right. And that's the second piece of this, that individuals have restrictions on what they can buy. Some companies force restrictions where they can't buy competitor stock, for example. So what do they do if they can't invest in a competitor stock? In these types of solutions that are coming to market, they're able to restrict those stocks so they don't run into that issue with their employer. And then the final point on this is, even if they don't have equity, and this goes across all sorts of industries, but if they don't have equity, they are overallocated to industries just by virtue of their employment being in a certain industry. So if that industry were to have a downturn, their employment's at risk. So now if you have your investment portfolio and your assets tied up in that industry as well, you're at risk not only of your investments falling, but also at risk of losing your job. And that could be a double-edged sword for you if that were to occur.
Yeah, so that sort of compounding of the human capital and the financial capital being tied up and sort of connected to the same industry could cause that double whammy. So using Absolutely. Your human capital as a diversifier, or vice versa, your financial capital, your investment capital as a diversifier from your human capital notion. So I'm starting to track here, and this all sounds very exciting, Kevin. I'm curious, could you elaborate a little bit more on where are you seeing different types of personalization options that are especially popular at the moment, whether those are, you know, the new ones that are coming out or the amount of assets that you're seeing directed to certain types of personalization or, you know, conversations with clients that you're having right now? Where do you see that twinkle in their eye happen when you bring up type of personalization X or Y? Where are you seeing interest and appetite?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, we haven't talked as much about taxes here, but obviously, you know, Russell has been focusing on taxes for a long time now and has developed a brand in it. And taxes is one of the biggest interests, as I mentioned earlier in my earlier comments, that 83% of advisors are looking for tax managed solutions. But taxes are something that can also be personalized. Everyone has a different tax situation, and people hate taxes. People hate paying taxes. So
especially unnecessary ones. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Especially taxes that they don't think they should be paying. So that's been an evolving trend that we've seen take off in a huge way over the last several years. So taxes is a huge one. And we're seeing these proposed tax changes in Washington that are making this really, really popular topic right now and really topical. And just to touch on taxes for a second. So there are a few vehicles that have been used for investing over the years that have been popular in the investor space or the advisor space. So the most obvious is mutual funds. And I think most advisors are very well aware of the capital gains distributions that they see in mutual funds on a year in and year out basis, where they then need to have conversations with their clients to explain to them that there's been a distribution in their mutual fund that they need to pay taxes on, even though they didn't decide to take any money out of that mutual fund. So that's been a pain point for clients and advisors to have the conversation and then clients to pay those taxes out. And not only has it been a pain point just on a year in and year out basis to pay the taxes, but it's been a significant drag on investor portfolios. So that's something that has been focused on over the last several years. It's been a pain point for a very long time.
And we certainly have a lot of resources around that and talk tracks and conversations and podcasts and things written on websites and in brochures. So if you want more of what Kevin is just talking about, we've got more for you. We can back up the truck. But yes, it has been a definite pain point for investors realizing, wow, this tax drag really takes a bite out of my return.
Yeah. And then so that can be solved in a few different ways. So one way is through tax managed mutual funds. Tax managed mutual funds look to generate losses throughout the year to offset gains in within a portfolio. So it's all happening on the fund level. And essentially, it's just delaying those gains until a future date when the investor actually wants to liquidate their portfolio. So that can be done in the mutual fund level. The other way that it's being done is through individual security SMAs, or what's oftentimes today being called direct indexing. And so direct indexing is nothing new. I would define it as essentially any SMA is technically a direct investment into securities. The indexing piece has just been that now instead of the traditional SMAs, which were all active, they're now looking to replicate a particular index. So it's been around for decades, but the scalability has been challenging and it's only been allowed in really, really large accounts. And now we can go down market with that given technology. As I mentioned in the beginning, technology is also helping in the investment space, not only our Netflixes and our phones and our coffees.
So taxes has been a really big area for personalization and customization. What other areas are you seeing the personalization and customization options resonating in with clients?
Yeah, absolutely. So ESG, we spent a decent amount of time earlier talking about ESG. Morgan Stanley puts out a sustainable signals report every year, every couple of years. And the most recent report from 2019 actually said that 85% of individual investors across the board are interested in sustainable investing, and 95% of millennials are interested in sustainable investing. And, you know, they need advisors to help them do that. In fact, if you look at the number of individuals who have actually taken action, so taken part in at least one sustainable investing activity already, it's 52% and 67% respectively. So there's a huge gap of individuals who are looking for this, frankly, probably don't know how to implement a sustainable strategy and need advisors' help to do it. So they're looking for that conversation from advisors, and it can be really impactful.
Hey, we're just going to take a quick break here, but we'll be back shortly.
Hey, it's Julie, your productivity and readiness expert at Vessel Investments. We'll get back to the podcast in just a sec. But first, a question we hear from financial professionals over and over is, how do I make my investment practice stand out from the one across the street? We're all looking for ways to be unique. One powerful way is by becoming a tax-managed investing expert. Our latest Value of Advisors study shows that taking a tax-smart approach can provide enough value to your investors that more than justifies a reasonable fee. And if you're thinking tax management sounds like too much work, don't. Because Vessel Investments can provide you with tax smart models that can help with all that portfolio management. Visit us at vesselinvestments.com to learn more and start setting your practice apart with a tax managed approach. Or then again, maybe you could just repaint your lobby. That might help too.
And we're back. So Kevin, you've mentioned that clients have an interest in personalization and customized portfolios because of tax sensitivity, because of ESG preferences, certain restrictions that they might want to put on a portfolio because of employment situations or other reasons. I'm wondering, especially as you're thinking about, you know, sort of a high net worth client demographic, maybe being a candidate type of client for this sort of solution, a lot of those individuals are also very inclined to charitable giving. There's a lot of different charitable giving options and vehicles and strategies. I'm wondering if personalized and customized portfolios play into that trend as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Sophie. Glad you brought that up. But many high net worth individuals give to charity on an annual basis, and they do so oftentimes for the tax benefit and also to support the charities of their choice. And a lot of times they're giving cash, and it's actually much less efficient to give cash than to send appreciated securities. And so with an SMA type vehicle, you can actually ask the investment manager to send you the appreciated securities instead of liquidating those securities. And those appreciated securities can be gifted to charity, and you're getting a double tax benefit for that because you're getting the deduction at the full value of those securities, not the post-tax value of those securities. And then you're also removing those highly appreciated securities from your portfolio. You can rebuy them in your portfolio to get back to a balanced position, but you no longer have that embedded tax gain in your portfolio, so you won't have to pay that ever, and you have a much stronger position for a tax-managed portfolio.
I can see how that's attractive. This sounds really compelling, Kevin. So now if I put my advisor hat on, I'm wondering, okay, so what's next? How do I get started on this? How do I identify the ideal client or prospect for personalization and customized portfolios? How do I start that conversation around establishing a customized portfolio? And what type of information would I need from a client to know, all right, I should, you know, this justifies a personalized portfolio and it should look like this, or this is the level at which it makes sense to customize. Obviously, we've mentioned we have a lot of resources already at Russell Investments that we have shared through different venues around the tax managed conversation. But any tips that you have, especially around tax managed, but also around the ESG preferences, how do I have that conversation with a client?
On the tax managed front, again, as you mentioned, we have a ton of resources to help start those conversations. And clients, we talked about these concentrated positions, and a lot of individuals have concentrated positions in their portfolios. And these could be positions that have been held for a long time just by virtue of holding a concentrated portfolio over years. Maybe they started investing 30, 40 years ago, and they don't want to sell out of that portfolio. Well, those individuals, the reason they don't want to sell out of those is because they have huge embedded gains and they'll take on a huge tax hit to do so. So those individuals are perfect to have a conversation with transitioning them into a SMA type portfolio that has a tax overlay on it, because instead of just ripping the Band-Aid off and funding the portfolio with cash, we could slowly move them to their ideal portfolio over time and help them understand the trade-offs of doing so. So you can get a report that would give them optionality on a time horizon to move into an ideal portfolio and what that could mean for the tax hit that they would take over time. Or they could even set a tax budget for transitioning the portfolio. So it might take a little bit longer, but they'll have less taxes on a year in and year out basis. And they'll have a little bit more tracking error before, as they move into that ideal portfolio. So that's on the tax front. Individuals with concentrated positions, individuals that just have cash accounts that have general tax concerns, which is essentially everyone that pays taxes. On the ESG front, I just mentioned that 85% of individuals want this and 95% of millennials want it. So it's all about having the conversation with your clients around their interest in these types of solutions. So an advisor could say something like, you know, with these types of SMA solutions we have, we actually have the ability to invest in a more personalized way on the preferences you may have. You know, there are several different social and environmental categories, such as guns and the environment, or even individual companies that we can avoid. So is that something you'd be interested in exploring with us? We can talk about the trade-offs of doing so. Just having that simple conversation with your clients could be really impactful. And again, as I mentioned, everyone's looking at this and everyone's interested in it today. So it's not something that would be met with a lot of pushback from most people.
Right. And presumably, you know, the more my advisor wants to know about me as a client and understand my perspective and my preferences, the more willing I am to share as well, and seeing that, you know, the advisor is really taking that interest. That's great. If I'm thinking from a segmentation perspective, say I have, you know, 150, 200 clients in my book, they're all, you know, taxpaying citizens. So in theory, yes, they could all be, you know, interested in this, but I might not feel like I can really do this for 200 clients. How should I sort of prioritize my clients? Who should I approach first?
Yeah, you know, the segmentation piece is interesting. And obviously we have a ton of resources on the business solutions team where we talk about where to spend your time with which clients and how we can help on that front. And so there's already a lot of work being done on segmentation. And the first thing to do with your book is just figure out, you know, what type of client is this? Is this a client that is most appropriate in a model that's off the shelf, an asset allocation model? It could be a mutual fund model that's tax managed. But then you have other clients that you know are much more hands-on. You know that they're looking for something more bespoke. You know they're looking for more personalization. And in fact, today you're probably building them their own asset allocation, or you're using your firm's resources to build them an asset allocation. And what goes into that asset allocation is what's really impactful here, because what are the underlying components of that asset allocation must include some, say, large cap equity. It could be a mutual fund that you're purchasing. It could be an ETF, or it could be an SMA that has these types of customizations available to them within the SMA. So looking at your high net worth clients that you're already spending a bunch of time on, you're already building their own asset allocation, and it's just changing the vehicles that you have underneath that would add a lot more personalization and impact to their investing.
Perfect. So now that you've helped me identify which clients I should be considering for this, what's the next step? I mean, if I've got clients that are in cash at the moment, presumably that would be the easiest thing to transition. But what if I have clients that have a lot of embedded gains, or clients that maybe already have a similar solution, but that doesn't offer as much customization and personalization as I would want? Maybe they're in a different, you know, sort of portfolio of individual securities already. How do I transition that? What do I need to take into account?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And it's a question we've had to answer for the entire period that we've been selling tax managed products, because at the end of the day, the last thing an investor wants to do is sell out of securities, realize a whole bunch of taxes to move into something that's focused on taxes. So obviously cash funding is the easiest, because there are no embedded gains in cash, and we can immediately move the individual into their ideal portfolio, but that's not all that commonplace these days. So what we're providing is, and I mentioned this before, but this ability to transition a portfolio over time and provide investors with an understanding of what their optionality is. So we can provide a tax transition analysis with just a little bit of information. All we really need are the holdings and the embedded gains and the amount of time that those holdings have been held. And we can put together an analysis that shows the individual exactly what their tax situation would look like if they transitioned either over a period of time, say 3 or 5 years, or with a tax budget, how long that might take for them to transition into their ideal portfolio while reducing those taxes as much as possible. And of course, the trade-off is tracking error there. So helping them understand the trade-off of not having the portfolio match or align to that ideal portfolio on day one, but having much less in a tax hit over time.
Terrific. And sort of aligning with that ideal portfolio over time then. So, Kevin, just as a final question, obviously you know a lot about customization and personalization and have been around that block a few times or a lot of times. I and now our listeners here today know enough about Russell Investments to know that when we at Russell Investments believe in an opportunity, we commit to it and we tend to back it up with a lot of resources. You mentioned the sort of tax managed effort as one of those examples. It seems like customization and personalization is kind of the next vanguard of that. Could you share with us, if I'm an advisor thinking about embarking on personalization and customization of portfolios for clients, why should I consider partnering with Russell Investments? There's a lot of other firms now that are starting to offer this and move in this direction as well. In your mind, you've spoken to a lot of them. What do you feel sets Russell Investments apart?
Yeah. So Russell Investments, we've been in the business for 85 years now, and personalization has been the foundation of our business. As an example, if you go back to the 70s, a lot of people are familiar with the Russell indexes. So we created a way for investors to express their views through value and growth instead of just core equity. And before that, we were managing money for the most sophisticated defined benefit plans and endowments in the world. And when you're managing money for those large pools of capital, you need to understand their unique preferences to build a portfolio that meets those objectives for those large defined benefit plans and institutions. In addition to that, we've been managing overlays and transitioning portfolios for institutions for decades. So we are trusted to help the largest institutions manage their portfolios based on the individual preferences they have. And we're really excited to be able to bring a lot of that expertise that we've had in the market for decades to the individual level helping advisors. And then finally, our tax managed heritage. This tax managed trend seems to be gaining a lot of steam more recently, but we've been managing tax managed portfolios for over 20 years. We have a really long history. And with that history comes a lot of learning. You know, we've learned the best ways to manage taxes for individual portfolios over that long heritage and time period and developed quite a bit of experience there.
Terrific. Well, thank you, Kevin. Thanks a lot for sharing with us your insights about the customization and personalization of portfolios and the increasing demand that you're seeing from advisors. I think you cited sort of 80% of advisors seeking personalization, especially in the tax managed space, and then a lot of clients also seeking that sort of personalization in terms of within the ESG space, that environment, social, and governance space in their investments. So thanks for helping us stay at the forefront as advisors of what our clients looking for, what might be the next thing, so that we can stay at the forefront of the evolution of the industry and of client needs, so that we can continue to differentiate ourselves and be competitive in this increasingly competitive industry. So thanks a lot, Kevin, for your time.
Thanks, Sophie.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back again soon. This podcast episode was recorded on May 11th in Jupiter, Florida, and Seattle, Washington.